Chapter 15. The Long Trail. A change was coming. White Fang could feel it, and he sat on the cabin step, whining.
"Listen to that," said Matt. "He knows what you're planning."
"How can I take a wolf to California?" demanded Whedon.
"You can't," said Matt.
Another long whine was heard through the door, followed by a sniff.
"He loves you," said Matt.
"I know that," shouted Whedon angrily. "And I know what's best."
"How does he even know you're going?" said Matt.
The day came when White Fang saw the bag on the floor of the cabin and Whedon putting things in it. He knew his master was leaving again. That night, he lifted his head to the stars and howled, as he had howled in his cub days when he had found the empty Indian village. Inside the cabin, the two men had just gone to bed.
"He's not eating again," said Matt from his bed in the corner. "I think he'll die this time."
"Oh, shut up," cried Whedon.
The next day, White Fang followed Whedon every time he left the cabin and sat on the front step when his master was inside. The bag on the floor was joined by two more bags and a box, and White Fang kept a close eye on them. He watched Matt rolling his master's furs into a bag, and he began to whine quietly again. Two men arrived and helped Matt to carry all the bags away down the hill to the boat on the nearby Yukon River. White Fang did not follow, because his master was still in the cabin. When Matt returned, the master called White Fang into the cabin.
"You poor creature," he said, stroking the wolf's head. "I'm off on a long trail, old man, where you cannot follow. Now, give me a last goodbye growl."
White Fang refused to growl. Instead, he pushed his head in between his master's arm and body. From the river came the sound of the boat's whistle, long and loud. It was time to go. The men had a plan. Matt went out of the back door, and Whedon went out of the front door, and they closed and locked both doors at the same time. From inside the cabin came whining and crying.
"Take good care of him, Matt," said Whedon. "Write and tell me how he gets on."
White Fang howled as if his master was dead. His heart was breaking. The Aurora was the first boat leaving that year, and it was full. Some passengers had found gold and were returning as rich men, while others had found nothing and were broken. Whedon and Matt shook hands.
"I don't believe it," said Matt, pointing up at the boat.
Sitting a few feet away, already on it, was White Fang. Whedon saw that there was fresh blood on White Fang's face.
"We forgot the window," said Matt. "That's how he got those cuts, jumping through the glass window."
But Whedon was not listening. He was thinking quickly. The Aurora gave its long last whistle, and Matt took off his neck scarf to put it around White Fang's neck. Whedon stopped him.
"Goodbye, Matt," he said. "About the wolf, you don't need to write. You see, I've..."
"What?" shouted Matt. "You're not going to..."
"Yes, I am," said Whedon. "I'll write to you about him."
"Make sure you cut his fur in the hot weather,"
shouted Matt as he left the boat. Whedon waved a last goodbye. White Fang standing by his side. San Francisco was like a bad dream, unreal and terrible. White Fang had known that white men were powerful, but this was hard for him to believe. The wooden cabins were replaced by great stone buildings like towers. The streets were packed with people, huge horses pulling trucks, and electric cars screaming like the lynxes he had known in the Northland. But this was the Southland, and White Fang was afraid. It was so big, and there was so much of it. The movement of things, the noise of things, the speed of things. Everything confused and frightened him, and he stayed close to his master. They came to the railway station, where the master put White Fang into a train carriage full of bags, boxes, and cases. He chained him up in the corner and left him. White Fang began to whine until he smelled his master's bags beside him, and he knew his job was to protect them. When the carriage door opened again and Whedon came to collect White Fang, the bad dream was over. The city was gone. White Fang jumped down into green countryside, quiet and empty and filled with sunshine. A carriage with horses was waiting. A man and a woman approached Whedon, the woman putting her arms around the master's neck. White Fang sprang into action, and Whedon just had time to catch him and hold him.
"It's all right, mother," he said. "He thought you were attacking me. He'll learn quickly."
Whedon's mother laughed, but she was pale and weak with fear. When she looked at White Fang, he snarled angrily at her. Whedon spoke softly to White Fang until he was quiet, and then his voice became firmer.
"Down, sir. Down with you."
White Fang obeyed and lay down, but it went against what his heart was telling him.
"Now, mother, we'd better try that again," said Whedon,
opening his arms to her, but keeping his eyes on White Fang, reminding him to stay down. White Fang saw that the woman did not hurt his master, and nor did the older man, who also put his arms around Whedon. The bags were put into the carriage, the three humans climbed in, and the horses pulled away. White Fang ran along behind and beside the speedy carriage, at times warning the horses to be careful with the master. The carriage drove into a stone entrance, in between two lines of tall old trees. On either side were large fields of short grass, and beyond were fields of golden corn, then hills. At the end of the lines of trees was a large stone house with many windows. White Fang did not get a chance to see all this, because a sheepdog jumped on him as soon as the carriage turned through the entrance. The sheepdog was bright-eyed and angry, getting between the master and White Fang. White Fang prepared to attack, but suddenly stopped and almost sat down when he realized that this dog was a female. It was a wolf law that a male dog must never attack a female. The sheepdog did not know about this law, and she could see the wild in this newcomer. She did not like it. White Fang was a wolf, and wolves ate sheep, and her job was to protect sheep. White Fang snarled as he felt her teeth in his shoulder, but he did not try to hurt her. When he backed away and tried to avoid her, she refused to get out of his way. The carriage drove on, and still White Fang could not get around the dog.
"Collie!"
shouted the older man.
"Don't worry, father," laughed Whedon. "He has to learn."
White Fang tried to run a big circle around Collie, but she ran on the inside and cut him off. The carriage was disappearing now, and the situation was getting desperate. He suddenly turned around and used his shoulder to knock Collie off her feet. She had been running so fast that she rolled over and over, away from White Fang. The way was clear, and he ran. She went after him, but when it came to running, she was no match for a wolf. He ran straight, silently and smoothly, like a ghost flying over the ground. As he came around the back of the house, he saw that the carriage had stopped, and his master was getting out. Still running at full speed, he realized too late that a second attack was coming, this time from the side. Another dog sprang on him, and the surprise was so great that it knocked White Fang off his feet. Whedon was running toward them, but he was too far away. It was Collie who saved the second dog's life. Before White Fang could spring in and tear open the dog's throat, Collie arrived and jumped on White Fang, knocking him over again. This gave the master time to get hold of White Fang while his father called off his dogs.
"That was some welcome for a wolf from the Arctic," said Whedon. "In all his life, he's only been knocked off his feet once. And there he is on the floor twice in 30 seconds.
More humans now appeared, two of them women and two children, and White Fang allowed them to put their arms around his master. When they tried to approach White Fang himself, he snarled, and the master advised them to stay away.
"Lie down, Dick,"
Whedon's father said to the second dog, who lay down, still growling, beside a door to the house. One of the women put her arms around Collie, who remained worried and restless. Why were the humans allowing this wolf to remain with them? The lovely, quiet life of Sierra Vista, Whedon Scott's country home, was over.